Thank you, Frank. Tēnā koutou te whānau o Auckland Unitarians. Tēnā koutou ngā manuhiri. Nau mai, haere mai. Haere mai ki te hui o te rā nei. Haere mai ki te kaupapa o te rā. Ko Rachel McIntosh tōku ingoa. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Yeah. Welcome all, church whānau and visitors, to this place of worship, virtual and physical, made sacred by Auckland Unitarians for 122 years. Welcome to those joining us remotely, to those here in the building, and to those watching the recording at a later time. For those here in person, you're all invited to join us for a cup of tea or coffee after the service. It is our sacrament of hospitality. My name is Rachel McIntosh, and I'll be leading our service today. I welcome you to the danger of this moment. May you find in this moment and in this community the comfort and the challenge, the love and the energy that you need. You are welcome as you are. You find us as we are. Today is Mother's Day. The theme of today's service is the thrill of participatory social justice. We say here in this congregation that we are building a beloved community. We want a society built on love, not on violence and fear. We sing of building a land where justice shall roll down like waters and peace like an ever-flowing stream. It's not too much of a stretch to connect today's theme with Mother's Day. In a beloved community, we live and act in compassion. When I was at university, I learned that the word compassion has Latin roots and means suffering with. When I came to this church and listened to Clay, I learned that if we go further back, we learn that the Hebrew word used first to describe compassion is rahum, which we translate as compassionate. The noun, verb, and adjective form of this word are all related to the Hebrew word for womb, rechem. When we act in compassion, we nurture each other that we may grow. I have a poem to open our service from Maya Angelou. You may recognize some of the sentiments in here. Mother, a cradle to hold me. It is true I was created in you. It is also true that you were created for me. I owned your voice. It was shaped and tuned to soothe me. Your arms were molded into a cradle to hold me, to rock me. The scent of your body was the air, perfumed for me to breathe. Mother, during those early, dearest days, I did not dream that you had a large life which included me, for I had a life which was only you. Time passed steadily and drew us apart. I was unwilling. I feared if I let you go, you would leave me eternally. You smiled at my fears, saying I could not stay in your lap forever, that one day you would have to stand. And where would I be? You smiled again. I did not. Without warning, you left me, but you returned immediately. You left again and returned, I admit, quickly, but relief did not rest with me easily. You left again, but again returned. You left again, but again returned. Each time you re-entered my world, you brought assurance. Slowly, I gained confidence. You thought you knew me, but I did know you. You thought you were watching me, but I did hold you securely in my sight, recording every moment, memorizing your smiles, tracing your frowns. In your absence, I rehearsed you, the way you had of singing on a breeze, while a sob lay at the root of your song. The way you posed your head so that the light could caress your face. When you put your fingers on my hand and your hand on my arm, I was blessed with a sense of health, of strength, and very good fortune. You were always the heart of happiness to me, bringing nougats of glee, sweets of open laughter. I loved you even during the years when you knew nothing and I knew everything. I loved you still, condescendingly, of course, from my high perch of teenage wisdom. I spoke sharply of you, often because you were slow to understand. I grew older and was stunned to find how much knowledge you had gleaned, and so quickly. Mother, I have learned enough now to know I have learned nearly nothing. On this day when mothers are being honoured, let me thank you that my selfishness, ignorance, and mockery did not bring you to discard me like a broken doll which had lost its favour. I thank you that you still find something in me to cherish, to admire, and to love. I thank you, Mother. I love you. The words for the chalice lighting are a poem by Pablo Neruda, Enigma with Flower. Victory, it has come late. I had not learned how to arrive like the lily at will, the white figure that pierces the motionless eternity of earth, pushing it clear, faint form till the hour strikes, that clay with a white ray or a spur of milk, shedding of clothing, the thick darkness of soil, on whose cliff the fair flower advances, till the flag of its whiteness defeats the contemptible deep of the night, and from the motion of light spills itself an astonishing seed. Now, if you would like, please join me in the words of the covenant of our congregation. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is the sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humankind in fellowship. Thus do we control shall grow in harmony. Thus do we covenant with each other and with our God. Marlon Drake has been working in the office where I work for a year or two now, and we've been on hello terms, but I realised when I invited you to speak, Marlon, that I actually don't know too much about you, but I googled you, woohoo, and I've learned that Marlon attended Western Springs College and then moved to Wellington, where he was a student activist at Victoria University, serving as president of the Students Association, campaigning against sexual violence and in favour of mental health support for students. He also worked part-time as an organiser in the living wage movement during this time, and I met you in the Wellington office while you were doing that, as a law student at Victoria. And Marlon is now the full-time community organiser at Te Ohu Whaka Whanaunga, a broad-based coalition in Auckland working for social justice. And I will leave Marlon to tell us more. Marlon, please.
Kia ora koutou, ko Marlon Drake tōku ingoa. Kia ora everybody, my name is Marlon Drake. Thank you so much for having me today on this Mother's Day. And Rachel asked me to reflect a bit on my own mum and what kind of story I would share today, so that's what I'll be opening with. When I think about my mum, I think about the gifts that she gave me growing up that kind of shaped how I see the world today. I think what mum gave me best of all was a different pair of glasses, different way to see the world, to see it more clearly through two lens. This kind of started when I was very young and in small moments, when I'd sit in the back of the car on a rainy day, we'd be driving down through Queen Street, or up past Queen Street, past St. Matthew in the city, and there would be the city mission. And I'd see people lined up outside. And as a young child, you don't know much about the world. I'd make some snide comment, oh my gosh, look at that guy, there's a crazy man outside. And mum would sternly remind me, she would say, at some point, that man was a little baby being held by his mum, even if for just a little moment. Little comments like that which planted little seeds in my head. As I grew older, these reminders and questions that she put to me started to get a bit more broad. Questions like, why is our house so bloody cold? Why are all the houses in this country so bloody cold? Mum's from Austria. She's from Vienna, where the houses are very warm. She grew up in a very warm house and could never understand why in a country like ours, with all the resources, all the talent, all the supposed good faith that we have, folks are still living in cold, damp, mouldy houses. I still have some fond memories with a scrubber or a microfiber cloth, because I'm quite tall, if you notice, on the roof of our bathroom cleaning like that to do my bit. Finally, the third thing I think that I really reflected on from Mum was courage. She moved pretty much entirely onto the other side of the world from Austria, which takes an immense amount of bravery and courage to do in and of itself, and build a life for herself here. And that courage and the courage of my mum gives me the courage and the ability, I would say, to fight for the things that I care about, to fight for that baby that was held in their mother's arms, to fight for the people who may not have a home, and fight alongside them, more importantly, not just care about these issues as an abstract concept, but to care for the people who might be going through them and to fight alongside them. And that courage is something which has been profound in my life and led me to being a community organizer, to fight for those issues which Rachel mentioned, and of course now to community organize here at Te Ohu Whakawhanaunga. Whereas Rachel said, we're building a community alliance of union, community, and faith organizations as well. I was talking last week, we had a five-day training residential retreat where we bring community, faith, and union leaders all together at Vaughan Park on the North Shore, and we go into the depths of community organizing, how to do it, unpack all the skills. And we were really privileged to be joined by Reverend Alec Toliafoa of the Polynesian Panther Party. And I mentioned to Alec that I was going to be coming here on Sunday to the Ponsonby Unitarian Church. And he looked at me and he said, gosh, yeah, we had a homework centre there once. I thought, really? He said, yeah, we had homework centres dotted all over the town. And it really made me reflect on, in preparation for this, how amazing it is to have this space which has been a part of so many things, as Alec told me, and so many causes. And looking around the room at the various posters, refugees welcome, respect for independent web of all existence. I love my favourite part there is the right of conscience and the use of democratic process in our congregation society. I love the democratic process, but why we're building an alliance. And it made me feel like this was the right place to be and this is the right group of people to be talking to, because we need you. And Rachel asked me to sort of come with a proposal, and what I would say is join up. We need your talents, whatever they may be. Looking at the roof of this building, you can kind of see these big curves and it looks like the bottom of a ship. I'm not too sure on the history of this building exactly, but I remember when I was in Wellington talking to the Archdeacon, Reverend Stephen King, not the author, a different Stephen King. And Reverend Stephen is in St. Peter's and Willis in the corner, right in the middle. It's a big, beautiful wooden church. And he told me about how the first people to build churches in New Zealand were shipbuilders. They came right off the boat. And the only thing they knew how to do was build ships, but they wanted to worship, they wanted to gather. And so they basically built big upside down ships to create their churches. So today I'm here asking you to bring your mastery of shipbuilding, whatever that may look like, to our alliance. Whether that be your ability to gather and connect with others, to play amazing piano. Thank you, Frank, that was brilliant. I was just behind him, I think he walked right in and just slam that one out. Your ability to bake and bring baking along to our big events, whatever that may be, whatever your skill is, whatever your view is, whatever you have to contribute, we would like you to contribute it and to come along and join Te Ohu, our alliance, alongside 40 other organizations. In September this year, September 6th now, we have Chris Luxon, Chris Hipkins coming along to a gathering of 1,000 leaders from across our alliance. And you have a seat at the welcome table. Join us, be there, and have your voice heard for the issues that you care about. But more than that, connect with the many other people doing good work across this city. I'm happy to stick around and talk to folks after. But again, thank you so much for having me. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Kia ora. That's a good point. Well, Te Ohu Whakawhanaunga is based on the same kind of community organising model. The living wage movement was a bit of a test run. It was, can this kind of thing build power? Can we get wins on something in Aotearoa? And it was chosen to be the living wage because that had been an issue for a long time in the unions and for a lot of the workers were facing. So the way that we've done it is the kind of the typical right way around. So we had about 3 years of talking within the community, doing something called table talks. And the three big issues which came out of that, the themes were decent work, housing, and migrant, former refugee and asylum seeker issues. So every single thing that has come into play in our alliance has been from those early conversations rising up and through the various organisations. So we have avoided it. Well, the first thing we'll do is we'll sit down and figure that out. And I'll say, well, what are the interests? What are you trying to do here in the Auckland Unitarian Church? And we'll start there. If that means organising locally and me as an organiser supporting you to do so, then that's what it'll be. If you want to jump straight in and join some of the big systemic stuff we're pushing for, then I'll also support you to do that as well. So the first one, well, it's those three. It's decent work, housing, migrant, former refugee and asylum seeker issues. Currently, we're going through our organising cycle to surface what those look like in particular actual asks. We always go for concrete asks. Get our politician on the stage or a decision maker and we say it's yes or it's no. So last year, for example, we had the top four mayoral candidates in the room at St Matthew in the city, and we asked them to, number one, commit to the right to a decent home as Auckland City Council and start implementing that throughout all their bits and bobs. Number two, to investigate inclusionary zoning, to investigate council building housing. And there was another ask, which is not coming to mind as I stand up here, but it was very important. Oh, we also had the living wage ask, so yeah, alongside that as well for council. And so those are some examples of how we're trying to shift, our institutions, our public government institutions, to a new norm. Thank you. Well, the biggest thing that we've agreed on, all of our community leaders have agreed on, all our faith, all of our experts, we pull in some experts to help, is that the market as a solution for the housing crisis has not worked. That is the number one thing that we have agreed on as a group. What that looks like in terms of change is more public housing. But also, in the city right now across Tāmaki, we have huge amounts of money, kind of like a worm, moving through the city, chewing up neighbourhoods and then spitting out new neighbourhoods. And in those neighbourhoods, you get some public housing and you get a whole lot of market private stuff. And people get kicked out of their houses and their state houses, spread across the city, put into the emergency housing system. There's one family I spoke to late last year, who's moved 5 times in 2 years into a different school zone. They have 3 kids. Kid went from being a grade A student to not even coming to school. So there's also the strong need for a community voice at the table for any kind of big development or regeneration that's happening across the city. So those are the two main ones. We've got kind of the systemic arm, like those asks that we're taking to council, and then also we've got the immediate problem or issue rather of big developments happening and happening up here at a bureaucratic level between property developers and the government with no community voice being taken on board. So that is probably an immediate thing that we're looking at addressing in the next year or starting to address in the next year, setting up some local councils of representatives through the alliance to steer developments in a direction that is more community owned. Wonderful. Well, she will know Faisal, who is a guy who's been coming along to a lot of our meetings lately. So in terms of refugees and resettled communities, I'm not sure where to look because you're on the screen. And as long as you can hear me. In terms of that mahi, there's two kind of projects. One is through that work stream, the migrant, we call it MFRAS, Migrant, Former Refugee and Asylum Seekers. So currently they're going through trying to pick out an issue from the many issues that they've been discussing within their groups over the last few years that we could actually take to government to get change on, whether that be in the quota or in the way that resettlement is done. There's a whole bunch of technical stuff within that. So that's kind of the main part. And we have several different organisations such as Migrant Action Trust, Belong Aotearoa, the Somali Community Trust as well, and a few others and who are working on that project. The other sort of side of it is supporting our organisations to organise how they want. So that's a big part of it, is me as an organiser going out to our member organisations and saying, okay, well, how can we apply some community organising kaupapa to what you're doing? And one example of that is through the supporting the building of a refugee alliance made up of refugee leaders, community leaders, and organisations. So that's one piece of work that we're currently looking at. And I believe that ARCC is a part of that. But very much what it's about is supporting leaders to come up and make the decisions for themselves in the alliance. That is the first most important thing, and building those relationships with the community. Sorry, it's very wordy. There's lots of technical stuff. I don't want to get... I feel like I might switch people off. But thank you for the question, Joel. There's two answers to that. First of all, the story about the living wage movement in Wellington. We had a city councillor called Andy Foster. He was a right-wing national guy. He never voted for the living wage. For the 9 years that the movement was operational, this guy just could not get behind it. He had every single reason in the book. Eventually, in that time, he ran for mayor, I think, two or three times. Finally, the last time that he ran for mayor, he came along to the forum, he stood up, and he committed yes, 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 yes to every single living wage ask. And then 2 weeks later, he was elected the mayor. And I remember when I was talking to the mayor after one of our submissions, he came up to me and said, "What you've done is you've made it so you can't be mayor of Wellington unless you support the living wage movement." That is the impact that a strong civil society alliance can have. If the market is doing their thing, if the state is doing their thing, where are we as civil society? How are we organising ourselves? How are we setting a new ground? Now, we've won the moral argument on the living wage in Wellington and many parts across the region, and starting to in other parts across the country too. And we can do the same thing for housing as well, because it used to be that way and it can be that way again. This current kind of big sell-off and hatred of any kind of person's need or any kind of public shared housing is a blip, in our opinion. And a strong civil society alliance can solve that. We can get National at the table, we can get Labour at the table, and we can start setting new bottom lines when it comes to public housing. And I totally agree with you. Great question, John. And the first and number one way to do that, there's a lot of different ways we can do that, but the number one way is to show up. And on September 6th, 6:30 p.m. to late 8 p.m., we have our founding event, and we need all of our organisations showing up in their communities, in the communities around them, their extended communities as well, because that's when we can actually show the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition and the leaders of the other minor political parties as well that we are a force to be dealt with as a community. Our voice is important, it needs to be heard. And those kind of events and that kind of showing up is what starts to change the narrative. But unless we show up and we show up loud and proud, we're not going to get that media attention. But more importantly, we're not going to be taken seriously by decision makers. So we need to find a way to demonstrate our people power, and that's by showing up. Kia ora.
Thank you very much, Marlon. That's been great.
Thank you. And now I invite you to say with me the words for extinguishing this chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
Okay, and I'm going to close. I'm going to go back to Maya Angelou, and I'm going to read a poem that I've actually read before in this church, but A, you're forgotten, or B, you weren't there then, so we shall be all right. This is a brave and startling truth. We, this people on a small and lonely planet, travelling through casual space, past aloof stars, across the way of indifferent suns, to a destination where all signs tell us it is possible and imperative that we learn a brave and startling truth. And when we come to it, to the day of peacemaking, when we release our fingers from fists of hostility and allow the pure air to cool our palms, when we come to it, when the curtain falls on the minstrel show of hate and faces sooted with scorn are scrubbed clean, when battlefields and Colosseum no longer rake our unique and particular sons and daughters up with the bruised and bloody grass to lie in identical plots in foreign soil. When the rapacious storming of the churches, the screaming racket in the temples have ceased, when the pennants are waving gaily, when the banners of the world tremble stoutly in the good, clean breeze, when we come to it, when we let the rifles fall from our shoulders and the children dress their dolls in flags of truce, when landmines of death have been removed and the aged can walk into evenings of peace, when religious ritual is not perfumed by the incense of burning flesh and childhood dreams are not kicked awake by nightmares of abuse. When we come to it, then we will confess that not the pyramids with their stones set in mysterious perfection, nor the gardens of Babylon hanging as eternal beauty in our collective memory, not the Grand Canyon kindled into delicious colour by western sunsets, nor the Danube flowing its blue soul into Europe, not the sacred peak of Mount Fuji stretching to the rising sun, neither Father Amazon nor Mother Mississippi, who, without favour, nurture all creatures in the depths and on the shores. These are not the only wonders of the world. When we come to it, we, this people, on this minuscule and kithless globe, who reach daily for the bomb, the blade, and the dagger, yet to petition in the dark for tokens of peace. We, this people, on this mote of matter, in whose mouths abide cankerous words which challenge our very existence, yet out of those same mouths come songs of such exquisite sweetness that the heart falters in its labour and the body is quieted into awe. We, this people, on this small and drifting planet, whose hands can strike with such abandon that in a twinkling life is sapped from the living, yet those same hands can touch with such healing, irresistible tenderness that the haughty neck is happy to bow and the proud back is glad to bend. Out of such chaos, of such contradiction, we learn that we are neither devils nor divines. When we come to it, we, this people, on this wayward floating body created on this earth, of this earth, have the power to fashion for this earth a climate where every man and every woman can live freely without sanctimonious piety, without crippling fear. When we come to it, we must confess that we are the possible. We are the miraculous, the true wonder of this world. That is when, and only when, we come to it.